Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio at blogtalkradio.com. You can interact with the show by calling 760-888-5749 or use the hashtag PWPRadio on Twitter. Here are your hosts, Jay Leno and Will TLD Vapidez.
Tonight's episode of Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Sign up today for a free audiobook and a free, absolutely positively free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/PWP Radio. Remember to include that /PWP Radio so they know we sent you. Once again, audibletrial.com/PWP Radio. Everybody who signs up helps support the show. Thank you very much and enjoy Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio.
What's up? This is the Friday Night Delight, FKA John Morrison, and you're listening to Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio.
Hey everybody, welcome to PWP episode number 77. Today is Wednesday, April 23rd, 2014. Hope everybody's having a good week today. We have a multitude of topics to discuss. So today's episode is going to be a little bit different. We're going to talk about a little bit of every promotion. We're going to talk a little bit of WWE, a little bit of TNA. I actually want to focus a little bit on Ring of Honor right quick as well. But before we get started on any of that, I want to go ahead and do some promoting right quick. To those of you that do not know, we're PWP, part of Pro Wrestling Powerhouse, and PWP, we pride ourselves on being different from other, I guess you can say, quote-unquote, dirt cheap websites. A lot of people like to just do a lot of copying and pasting and, you know, not really giving any credit, and half the time the stuff is wrong. You know, well, we don't really do that at PWP. At PWP, we're more wrestling fans. We give our opinions, we analyze wrestling angles, and we post articles about it, and that's really all we do. Sometimes we post humorous stuff as well. We're thinking about different ideas that we can do to branch out, to reach more fans, but that's what we are at PWP, and if you're interested in PWP, if you want to contribute more to PWP, you can go to www.prowrestlingpowerhouse.com. You can also check out our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. Right now, we're currently around 3,342 likes. That was how much it was when I checked it an hour ago. It may have gone up some. Also, the Twitter account, you can also follow us at PWP Powerhouse at Twitter. So, anyway, just had to get some you know, promotional stuff out there right quick. And as I said earlier, we're just going to go through a bunch of topics today. We're going to talk about TNA Sacrifice pay-per-view this Sunday. We're going to talk a little bit about WWE, what's going on with Cesaro, Extreme Rules. I also want to talk a little bit about Ring of Honor as well. And I also want to talk a little bit about The Ultimate Legend, which was a documentary that was on the WWE Network earlier this week, or was it last week? I think it was last week. I'm really tired. Yes, it was last week. So before we start, though, I'm going to bring in my co-host. I believe this is JCD.
What's up, man?
I'm good. Actually, just watching SuperCard of Honor about a day ago, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah, they are really got potential. If they can get their pay per view right, you know, I would project they could do very well. I mean, the only problem with ROH to me is the fact is that they're not in probably their second biggest market. I mean, if you really think about it, they really go out of their way to make their Hammerstein shows amazing, and you have no TV in New York. I understand what they do on the website, and that's all great and everything, but, you know, it would be like, that would be like the NWA back in the day not being on TBS in Atlanta. You know, it's just, it's the only thing with that company that puzzles me. You know, I can accept the, you know, all right, you know, maybe they can't get iPay-per-view perfect, but the fact that you're not on in New York City it's unacceptable at this point, and that's going to be what holds them back.
Yeah, the lack of a solid TV deal has definitely been one of their weaknesses, but getting a pay-per-view on, you know, being able to have pay-per-views that you can order is definitely a good way to go in the right direction. So we haven't discussed this on actual PWP radio yet, so I'm reading this from the official site for the listeners out there. On April 17th, 2014, Ring of Honor announced that they were going to be having pay-per-view programming starting with Best in the World, which is going to be at the Fairgrounds at Nashville, Tennessee, on June 22nd. So this is going to be Ring of Honor Best in the World 2014. And to those fans out there that do not follow Ring of Honor, Best in the World is a moniker that Ring of Honor has been using for years. I know there's a lot of fans that don't really follow Ring of Honor. They think that, oh, that's a sign that CM Punk's going to, you know, come back to Ring of Honor. No, Ring of Honor has been using the Best in the World moniker, like, for years, as far back as, like, probably since the beginning. I don't know. I know they've been using the Best in the World moniker,
yeah,
like since like 07 or something. I mean, I'm not saying Punk isn't back. You know, I'm not a psychic or nothing, but I just want fans to know, because a lot of fans do not follow Ring of Honor and they don't know what's going on. So again, Best in the World is their moniker pay-per-view. They have it every summer, and it's been that way like since 07, 08, 9-ish. It's been there for a while. I don't know the exact year. But to continue reading on, the people that are currently advertised for the pay-per-view, Matt Hardy, Kevin Steen, the Briscoe Brothers, Ring of Honor World Champion Adam Cole, Unbreakable Michael Elgin, Jay Lethal, Maria is also going to be there. The Ring of Honor pay-per-views were normally on Saturday, but since this is going to be like, you know, since you can order it the old-fashioned way, they're now going to be on Sundays, and they're going to be at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time, with a runtime of about 3 hours. The event is going to be rated TV-14. It will be available in HD for all you HD fans out there. And right now, the price that I'm hearing is somewhere around $24.95, so basically like $25 plus tax, which isn't that bad of a deal. I mean, Ring of Honor, they don't have, like, pay-per-views every month, like, say, WWE or TNA. So if they're just having pay-per-views, like, you know, every other month or, like, once every 3 months, I wouldn't mind putting down $24 to watch a wrestling show that I know is going to deliver. But, yeah, it's going to be June 22nd. It's going to be in the Nashville Fairgrounds, Nashville, Tennessee at the Fairgrounds and stuff. And, so this is the Best in the World. And if you want any more information, you can go to ringofhonorwrestling.com. You can like them on Twitter, at Ring of Honor, or you can go to their Facebook page, facebook.com/Ring of Honor. So this is a big move for Ring of Honor. You know, with the success of the WWE Network, you know, more companies are dropping WWE pay-per-views. You know, so this is a good time for, you know, there's a slot that's open, and Ring of Honor is taking advantage of that. So I think any diehard Ring of Honor fan, they're going to continue watching on streams anyway. But for those fans that are not familiar with Ring of Honor, or for those wrestling fans out there that have some money to burn, I can definitely see them, you know, ordering Best in the World, you know, just to give it a chance. I will be ordering this show, and, you know, I'm going to give it a chance. I've been watching Ring of Honor lately. I've been a fan of the product. I'm still relatively new. I don't know everybody, but I can watch a show and, for the most part, understand what's going on. And with that said, I just want to transition this into the Supercard of Honor. I'm going to go through this right quick. Supercard of Honor was held on April 4th. It was a few days before WrestleMania. I'll just go through the card. I mean, some of these matches were just kind of there. To those fans that don't know, Ring of Honor, they have intermissions in their pay-per-views, which is a little weird to fans that just follow WWE. I admit it is a little weird. But it makes sense, though. Because, you know, you have an intermission, you know, the fans can leave, you know, they can take a piss, get some beer, get some food, and come back. You know, like WWE, TNA, you know, we have matches that we call piss breaks, and we leave, you know. So there's always, like, you know, one or two matches that we miss. Ring of Honor, they handle that by just having intermissions, so people are there the whole time. But Roderick Strong, he had a great match against Cedric Alexander in the first match, the Decade. They defeated Adrenaline Rush in a scramble match. A scramble match is different. A scramble match, to those that are not aware, is basically a tag team match, but tags are, like, not really allowed. So, for instance, if you're thrown over the top rope, then someone else can just automatically come in. It sounds simple on paper, but it can actually be very exciting, especially if you have, like, a lot of cruiserweight guys. This style of tag team wrestling is very common in AAA and Lucha Libre promotions and stuff. Michael Bennett, he defeated Mark Briscoe in a no DQ match. Red Dragon, they became the number one contenders for the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions. They'll get their match at War Worlds. I believe the Tag Team Champions are the Young Bucks. Jay Lethal turned heel, and he defeated, I apologize if I botched his name, I think his name is Tommaso Ciampa. I think I got his last name wrong.
No, you nailed it perfectly, Toph.
Cool, thanks. I actually like to see that. I'm a huge Jay Lethal mark. I love his work in TNA. I love him as Black Machismo. I would love this guy to go to WWE. Him and Consequences Creed were very entertaining. Just the silly stuff they did, they would be great in WWE. But it was a 2 out of 3 falls.
Let me tell you something real quick, going back to Lethal. The heel turn has been brewing for like a year and a half. It's so rare, of course, in this day and age that something builds up, you know, that long. But they've been teasing Lethal, like, just being frustrated and annoyed and always being the guy that just the funky circumstances happen to. And he was actually, with all the guys that were around in, what was it, 2011 or early 2012, he was actually the guy that was responsible for Jim Cornette being taken out, at least storyline wise, as far as, so it shows what they think of him. And yeah, the turn came off well, and it's a great role for him. And now that he's got the TV belt too, he's in a nice little spot there.
So to those listeners that are not familiar with the Ring of Honor product and don't know what's going on, Jay Lethal and Tommaso, they've been having a long rivalry. They had a match a long time ago, and Tommaso injured his leg, and he was out for a while. And, you know, in wrestling, when someone injures you, you always kind of have that beef against them. So Tommaso, he won the TV title, I believe, at Final Battle at the last pay-per-view of 2013. Mm-hmm. And since then, he's had a series of matches, some singles matches of Jay Lethal and some three-way dance matches. And each match, Jay Lethal kind of has him beat, but he ends up kind of like getting the short end of the stick, like, you know, the referee didn't see the 3 count, you know, there was a quick count, or Jay Lethal was distracted. So this was a 2 out of 3 falls match where, and I love 2 out of 3 falls, because 2 out of 3 falls, they usually are like something big happens. So Jay Lethal, he ends up getting the first pinfall, and then Lethal and Tommaso, they start working for a while. I love Lethal's finisher, the Lethal Consequences, Lethal Injection.
Yeah.
Lethal Injection is cool. To those that haven't seen it, he like does this sort of, he kind of does like a mini cartwheel to bounce off the ropes and then like turns it into a cutter. Like, it's really hard to hit, and like realistically speaking, it's like impossible to hit, but it's wrestling, so just enjoy it for what it is. But what basically happens is he ends up trying to use the move like on 3 different occasions, and on the 3rd occasion, and he ends up hitting the referee, and Truth Martini, he comes out and he gives the knee brace of Tommaso. See, Tommaso, at the beginning of every Ring of Honor match, they shake hands. And at the beginning of the match, Jay Lethal offered a handshake, and Tommaso gave him the knee brace bed to let him know, you know, you injured my knee. So Truth gave Jay Lethal the knee brace, and then Lethal kind of had this conflicted look, like, should I use it? And then he used it on him, and then he pinned him. And then Tommaso kicked out at 2. And then he hit the All Hail to the King, which is the tribute to Randy Savage, and then he kicked out at 1. This happens a lot at Ring of Honor. A lot of times the Ring of Honor guys will hulk up, they'll kick out at 1. And then Jay Lethal, like, he hit him with, like, 2 super kicks, and Tommaso no-sold it. But then he hit him with the super kick to the leg, and then he hit the Lethal Injection, 1, 2, 3, new TV champion Jay Lethal. Here's what surprised me the most. This is what really, like, hooked me to Ring of Honor. So after Jay Lethal won the match, I was curious. I went to Google, and I Googled the Ring of Honor TV title. And to my surprise, Jay Lethal is the first 2-time Ring of Honor champion. And they were putting this over so strongly, like, you know, oh, my God, Jay Lethal is the first ever 2-time TV champion. And I was scratching my head because I was like, really? Just, and that just, that seems so minimal, especially when you compare it to like WWE and TNA. But then I looked at the title prestige history of Ring of Honor, and I realized the Ring of Honor, these guys have long title reigns, very long title reigns.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's also,
yeah, you know, I believe
also,
the only person in the Ring of Honor
is board.
A springboard?
It's a springboard. It's what the IC title used to be. You had a nice one with the IC belt, and then you know what? You went for the world title. The same thing. I would say 9 out of the 10 guys that have probably held the TV title, I'm just guesstimating off the top of my head, more often than not, have won the ROH world title.
To my knowledge, the only person that has been a 2-time Ring of Honor champion is Austin Aries. So, but yeah, the champions of Ring of Honor, they hold the belts for a very long time. And it's pretty much what you described, JCD. It's like what the Intercontinental title was like in the early 90s, like 91, 92, 93, when it was really prestigious and really hard to win.
Even before
that. Yeah, yeah, so... It was cool to see Jay Lethal win. The last two matches, Michael Elgin against Kevin Steen. Michael Elgin, this dude is ridiculous. This guy is so strong. If you guys think Cesaro's strong, Elgin's ridiculous. I understand Elgin's trying to try out with some NXT. I'm hearing stories he might get a tryout soon. I can see why WWE wouldn't get him, because him and Cesaro are really cut from the same cloth. But this guy's crazy. He has a spot where he does the same deadlift suplex that Cesaro does. He also does the stalling vertical suplex that Supermex, a.k.a. Hernandez, used to do in TNA. This guy's strong, but he had a really good match with Kevin Steen. The winner is going to get a championship opportunity at the IWGP Heavyweight Championship at War of Worlds, and Michael Elgin won. And in the very last match, Adam Cole versus Jay Briscoe and Lauda War. Oh, my goodness. This match was brutal. I assumed that since WWE and TNA have the no chair shot to the head thing, I assumed that Ring of Honor is the same. Nope. Nope. 5 minutes into this match, Adam Cole gave Jay Briscoe like the stiffest chair shot I've seen in years. There must have been about maybe at least 5 or 6 chair shots to the head. It was a really good match, and I really like Adam Cole's heel persona, and I like Jay Briscoe's finisher. But in the end, Adam Cole won, and he's the current Ring of Honor champion. Overall, though, it was a really good show, and it really sold me a Ring of Honor, and lately I've been trying to watch it more every week. It can be a little bit difficult in giving Ring of Honor a schedule, and again, like you said earlier, JCD, you know, their lack of a solid TV deal is holding them back. But having a pay-per-view, you know, being able to order it the old-fashioned way is definitely a step in the right direction. So from now on, you know, I'm going to try to attempt to update Ring of Honor fans and PWP fans on Ring of Honor and talk about it a little bit more. We always talk about WWE. We always talk about TNA. I'm realizing now that we're entering a new era of wrestling with the network being successful, with TNA going to New York soon, with the promotion that Jeff Jarrett's coming out with probably next year, and with Ring of Honor finally having their own pay-per-views. I realize now that we're entering a new era of wrestling. What this era is, I don't know. We can't give it a name yet. So I feel like that we should, you know, use this opportunity to talk about more wrestling promotions. But that's all the Ring of Honor talk I have for now. Is there anything else you wanted to add to that, JCD, before we move on?
No, I mean, yeah, the Adam Cole character is phenomenal, especially with Matt Hardy. It really works. Bennett has taken his character to a new level. It's weird. It seems like the guys who are on there, who were at that big tryout last year when, you know, Bennett and Cole, they stayed, and they're definitely being rewarded for it. And, you know, at the very least, I know this would suck for ROH fans here, but you know what? At least they're showing new dimensions to their characters that, you know what, maybe this time next year they're, you know, they are signed to deals. But yeah, it's they've got a really good product, and you know, I mean, they still got, you know, a loose relationship with AJ. They still got Chris Hero, you know, somewhat in the fold, you know, so they're in a good spot. You know, they really are. So, you know, we'll see where they go, and these next couple of shows are going to be really interesting for them.
All right. So moving on, next thing we're going to talk about the Ultimate Legend, which was a part of the Warrior Week that was on the network last week, and it was just pretty much they follow Warrior around before, during, and after the Hall of Fame thing, and you got to see the opinions and people talk about Warrior. A lot of Sting in this particular in this particular documentary. We'll get to the Sting stuff. Actually, we've already talked about the Sting stuff enough. I think everybody knows how we feel about Sting. Okay, but it was a pretty good documentary, and it was very sad in a sense to see that. It was a very bittersweet watch for me. On one hand, it's sad, but at the same time, it's at least he finally was able to, you know, put all that stuff at peace, you know, and all that. And at least they were able to induct him, you know, while he was alive and stuff. Did you see the Ultimate? How did you feel about it?
I think he nailed it. To me, it was very surreal. This whole thing is still like, what? You know, like, it's still just surreal that it happened. And, you know, like you said, it was good to see that, you know, there was that closure. I can't get past this fact. Something tells me he knew. You know, something, I can't shake it that, you know, he knew, because it just seemed like he was just so at peace, and any issues that he had, he more or less resolved them all. It was just, and I thought it was really well done. I mean, you know, under the circumstances, it was, you know, and how short it was done, and the real emotion, you know, you could tell, especially with Vince and even Hunter having to explain the whole process of having to tell Vince, you know, because he was the first one that got the call. Like, you know, I mean, I know Hunter gets a lot of shit for a lot of stuff, but that's got to be a hard burden to have on your shoulders while that phone's ringing, you know, especially if Vince doesn't pick up on the first ring, you know, knowing that in about 3 seconds you got to deliver this news. It's a little unfortunate that this is how Sting's arrival pretty much, you know, is being delivered and confirmed. But, you know, even him, you know, it's been known that they lost touch, you know, but even Sting seemed legitimately, you know, emotional and genuine in everything they, you know, he said. And, you know, his family, his daughters, the letter that his wife posted this week was just amazing. And, you know, it's unfortunate that he's gone, but like you said, at least he got to make peace and say that goodbye. And, you know, I thought all three shows were really well done. You know, I really thought they were. I don't think they've exploited it, you know. I thought the Tribute Monday was a nice little touch. You know, it was a really good watch. And I'll be honest with you, I've watched it multiple times, you know, since it's been on, because it really meant that much. And I love the fact that, you know, they're talking to USA about maybe airing it. That, I think that would just be awesome for anybody that doesn't have the network. It really is a must see.
I might have to watch it again. And not try to pay as much attention to the Sting stuff like you said earlier, but it was definitely a good watch. Okay, right now what I want to do is I want to go and through some TNA news, talk about Sacrifice right quick. First and foremost, let's talk about the Manhattan Center. To those of you who don't know, this is what I'm reading from the official Impact Wrestling website. TNA will bring cameras to New York City for the very first time for three incredible Impact Wrestling live events from June 25th to June 27th. At the Grand Ballroom at the Manhattan Center. My memory might be wrong, but if memory serves me correctly, isn't that where the first Raw was held at, JCD?
Yes. There's two rooms. There's two rooms in the Hammerstein Ballroom in the Manhattan Center. There's the room upstairs where the old Raws used to be. That's the smaller of the two. And then there's the room where ECW used to run the pay-per-views, like the last Guilty as Charged and, you know, whatever the hell the December pay-per-view was called. I haven't seen what room they're going into. This is a big difference. Okay? It's not like one room holds 10,000 and another room holds 12,000 where it's not a big deal. There are big differences in the size of these rooms. So going to play a factor in this, because it's easy to sell out the 500-seat room. Can you sell out the 7,000-seat room? That's big.
I remember one of their best house shows was like, I think it was like 2011 or early 2012, one of their best house shows was somewhere in the New York area. I remember vividly reading a report about it, said it had a great turnout, and I had like around like 3,000 or something.
Yeah, I remember that. That's when they did the New York City run. The only thing that worries me about them doing this, and I don't know if it's going to fly with this crowd, because of how they – I don't know if the – we're going to tape a show, and then we're going to tape half of another show, but then we're going to tape this part of a one-night-only pay-per-view, and you got to come back tomorrow night to see the other taping or the other – I don't know if that's going to fly. If I was them, because supposedly they want to do TV and then they want to do a one of those one-night-only pay-per-views, I would do it if you got to suck it up and blow through your TV tapings and tape like two episodes in 3 hours. Be smart. Do that. Then do another 2 weeks of taping and then do the one-night-only pay-per-view. Do not do these split shows because I don't know if that's going to fly here.
Yeah, I agree. You guys are very, you New York fans do not hold back about letting promotions know how you feel, especially if it seems like a show is dragging. That is kind of strange. But
it's not even dragging. It's just that if let's say you don't go to the Thursday night taping, you go to the Friday, and they just pick up the second episode of Impact, halfway in. People are going to be like, what the fuck? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you can't pull that everywhere. You know, it doesn't work that way. And, you know, just tape straight through. You'll get more done that way. It is going to be – those are going to be some very interesting shows. Those are going to be some very interesting crowds. And I think – the one person who definitely should not appear on camera is Dixie Carter. She will get destroyed.
She will get Rick Rude, but in a bad way. Rick Rude was just a good heel. Dixie will. Either way, though, congrats to TNA for finally, attempting to make a big jump over there in the northern, the northeastern areas. You know, got to get out of the comfort zone and go elsewhere, so I'm excited for that. But that won't be coming until later this summer. Okay, so I'm just going to go through this sacrifice card right quick. We got Eric Young defending the TNA Heavyweight Championship against Magnus. As far as I know, this is a singles match. Madison Rayne will be defending the Knockouts Championship against Angelina Love. Bully Ray against Bobby Roode in a tables match. James Storm and Gunnar will be in an I Quit match. Kurt Angle and Willow will be fighting Ethan Carter III and Rockstar Spud in a tag team match. Sonata will be defending his X Division Championship against Tigre Uno in the final best of three series for the X Division Championship. And Mr. Anderson will be fighting Samuel Shaw in a committed match. And according to what I'm reading here, the loser will be sent to a mental institution. to be honest, this card looks like a regular episode of Impact, and most of these matches, actually all of these matches, we've seen already. But on the positive side, it's nice to see TNA back on pay-per-view because for a long time, their pay-per-views were just gone. So now that they're finally having pay-per-views again, that I'm assuming that their money situation has gotten a little bit better. That's just what I'm assuming.
No, it's not.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I'm just being optimistic.
This run of Lockdown and Sacrifice was just how they were going to run the pay-per-views. You're not going to see an actual pay-per-view again, I think, until Bound for Glory. I think we're going to fall back into... I think we're falling back to the specials after
this. Okay.
There was a big problem in Orlando, apparently, this week. Apparently, Janice Carter and some of the people from Panda Energy who showed up, and a lot of people were like, what the hell are they doing here? You know, they always sit in their offices. And they all, you know, if anything, they call or send an email. They showed up. They were in Orlando last week, and there's a lot of people that are also concerned that this TV deal has not worked out yet, you know. And a lot of people feel that Grubrick's in over his head. He's handing out contracts that some people don't understand why they're being signed for that long, because there are some people that just don't believe the company's going to be around when these contracts come due, and that's bad. Like, for all the good you hear about, like, they had the great European tour and England was great, it's like they come back and it's like everyone just gets punched in the gut again. I'm telling you, Jarrett is going to murder them.
Yeah, well, yeah, TNA is definitely their biggest threat, is obviously what Jarrett's going to do with his promotion and all that good stuff. From what I understand, one common complaint that I'm hearing is a lot of the people on Impact Wrestling, they're confused when they have to do these one-night-only tapings and they're jobbing to guys that don't have full contracts yet. That seems to be hurting morale, according to some of the things that I've read.
Yeah.
But the sacrifice pay-per-view goes, I'm sure the pay-per-view itself will be fine, or I'm sure the wrestling will be solid, but overall there is really nothing on this show that we haven't seen already. So I even though I'm a TNA fan, I hate to say this is kind of a passable pay-per-view, but if I have the money to spend, because I do get paid on Friday, I might consider buying this just to support TNA. But that's pretty much all I got to say about TNA right now. For more information on Impact Wrestling, you can like them on Facebook at facebook.com/impactwrestling. Go to their website at impactwrestling.com, or you can follow them on Twitter at Impact Wrestling. So that's pretty much all the stuff for Impact Wrestling, TNA, whatever. And this moves us to WWE talk. Right now I want to go through what they have for this Extreme Rules card right now. The card right now is looking kind of really, especially when you compare it to previous Extreme Rules, because usually Extreme Rules is usually a very good show that delivers, and not that this show is going to be bad, but if you look at the card now, it's like, eh. Right now, you got the finals for the Intercontinental Championship. Biggie Langston will be defending against RVD or Bad News Barrett. John Cena will be fighting Bray Wyatt in a cage match. Paige will be defending the Divas title against Tamina Snuka. Evolution will be fighting The Shield, and as far as I know, this is a six-man tag, no other type of gimmick. Daniel Bryan will be defending the WWE World Heavyweight Championship against Kane, and this is officially an Extreme Rules match. And Alexander Rusev with Lana will be fighting Xavier Woods and R-Truth in a 2-on-1 handicap match. Honestly, this card looks meh to me.
And you're gonna get the Usos against Ryback, so.
Yeah, right. Those guys
coming
too. That'll probably
night.
Be like. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if that was on the pre-show, which would be exclusive to the network again, to the fans out there.
Yep.
So rather than talk about this pay-per-view, one thing I want to talk about is I want to talk about this Cesaro situation, because a lot of fans don't seem to be taking well to it. Here's the way I see it, okay? Paul Heyman, he's got to do something. Okay, Brock Lesnar beat Taker. So Heyman, you know, Lesnar's not going to be there. He's going to, you know, take breaks and stuff. Heyman's going to be there, and he's got to do something. And if he's got to do something, he's got to be with somebody. So what WWE's logic, but I believe they thought is, okay, we got a rising star with Cesaro, so let's just put Heyman with Cesaro. You know, they have the right intentions. I understand what WWE is trying to do with Cesaro. The problem is, here's the problem. First of all, when he won the Battle Royale, he shook Big Show's hand, and the fans popped. I've looked at that match. I actually liked that Battle Royale. I was surprised. That was one of those matches where you just went in with low expectations, and you were blown away. You know, when Cesaro shook Big Show's hand, the fans popped. And if you go back and watch that, Big Show offered his hand. And then Cesaro accepted. When you have a heel do that, that's a babyface turn. That, you can go back as far back as SummerSlam 2004. Randy Orton beat Chris Benoit. He became the World Heavyweight Champion. Chris Benoit left the ring. He came back and demanded a handshake. Orton, the heel, didn't have to, but accepted it anyway, which really made him a face. And then the very next night, Evolution turned on him, thus solidifying the babyface turn. So outside of Ring of Honor, typically when a heel shakes a person's hand after a match. That's a babyface move. And the fans were cheering Cesaro. Another thing is, you know, this is just kind of, this is like kind of minimal and obscure. It may not mean anything. But I don't know if you guys have noticed, but the fans were actually starting to sing the We the People theme when he came out, like how fans sing the Fandango theme. Like when Cesaro was coming out, fans were actually singing like da 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 da. Like it's a catchy theme. Like fans were, the whole We the People thing, the real American thing. I'm a firm believer of the saying, if it's not broke, why fix it? I think that Cesaro was doing just fine. I think that Coulter should have just dropped Swagger, just keep Zeb with Cesaro, keep doing the We the People, keep doing the swing, you know, he was getting over. And they put it with Heyman. They've taken away his theme song, and then they gave him a new one this week, which most don't like at all. And instead of talking about Cesaro, Heyman's just talking about Lesnar ending the streak, which does nothing for Cesaro, which makes me
Okay, all right, what? Finish that thought. I hope you finish it with the right statement. Finish that.
Oh, I was getting ready to say, I think Heyman's saying, you know, he's talking about Lesnar ending Taker's streak, which does nothing for Cesaro, which makes many fans believe that this is going to lead to Cesaro-Lesnar down the road.
Yes.
There we go.
Yes,
there we go.
That is the whole point of this, okay? That is the whole point. For everyone that scratched their head about why Cesaro ended up with Heyman, it is for this simple fact. How disgustingly obvious is it going to be that Cesaro is eventually going to get fed up with Heyman, not paying any attention to him, not ever talking about him, and always talking about Lesnar, that you think people wanted to see Cesaro swing Zeb? Wait till you see people want to see Cesaro swing Heyman. And when Lesnar and Cesaro go at it, whether it's at SummerSlam or after, remember, the guy who beats Lesnar gets the rub of not only beating Lesnar, but beating the guy who beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania. That is huge. Whether it's Bryan at SummerSlam or Cesaro, that's going to make that just that much more bigger. And if it's Cesaro, then there's going to be no stopping him. And if it takes 6 months to get there, let him get there.
I'd rather Cesaro do it. I don't think Bryan needs that kind of rub at this point anymore.
It couldn't help. It depends where his title reign runs. Because
speaking of that, a lot of fans are concerned about that. Okay, well, first and foremost, some fans may not know this. Bryan Danielson, I like to say his real name in circumstances like this. Bryan Danielson's father passed away in real life, not a story or anything like that. That must suck. You know, he won the title at WrestleMania, you know, got married to Brie Bella, and then, you know, comes back on the honeymoon, his father passes away. So his father passed in real life. And the whole angle you saw on Monday, to the fans that do not know, that was just an angle to write him off, you know, so he can, you know, tend to family stuff like that. You know, I saw a lot of fans saying, oh, my God, Bryan's getting buried again. Like, no, he's not getting buried. He's just, you know, his dad died. That sucks. So,
yeah.
You know, that's all that is. So, by the way, was that you that wrote that buried article? I saw that on PWP.com.
No.
Was that you that wrote
that? That was Zach Fellows who wrote that, and that's a great article. Anybody who hasn't checked it out, I mean, forget putting my stuff over. Go for all you people that like to throw the word buried around so easily, go read that article by Zach on PWP.com. That's a great article. As far as Bryan goes, what should have happened the night after WrestleMania, and I guess I understand with the whole Shield angle why it didn't happen, if you knew he was going to get married, you should have laid him out. You know? And then, all right, so he's off TV last week, and he comes back this week, and I know it would have sucked because, you know, no one, you know, you didn't expect the guy's father to die. So it would have kind of probably been a catch-22 to have him laid out twice in 3 weeks. But it's not so much, I mean, the beating that he took on Monday, that was almost attitude era style beating. Like,
yeah, it was.
That was the only thing that was missing was Brian busted open. You know, that's the only thing that was missing from that to be a really like attitude error beating. You need that. You got to everyone needs to remember, you know, before we go and turn Brian into Super Cena, you know, he beats everybody, wins all the time, you know, because Cena sucks because of that. You need Brian to be vulnerable, especially against Kane, when it's not going to be a top-level feud. It's not Triple H, it's not Orton, it's not Batista, it's not Wyatt. You know, you need, and it's not so much Brian looking vulnerable, although that's part of it, but the other part is you need to make Kane look like a serious threat. And you know what? It's the same reason why I said the match with Sheamus, that everyone and their mother was ready to kill themselves over, why it worked. It needs to happen. He needs to get past these skeletons from his past. So now Kane is vicious, maniacal, violent, you know, all this stuff again. Destroys Brian. Holy shit, how's Brian going to beat Kane? Now Brian beats him next Sunday. That, you know, he's past that now. You know, it's... And then it's where they go from there, you know, because it looks like Triple H and those guys are going to be involved with the Shield for a little. Batista's got to take some time off to do some stuff with Guardians of the Galaxy. So my only concern isn't so much, I mean, and the fact that we're talking about Lesnar, Bryan potentially at SummerSlam at least shows that there's plans for Bryan to hold on to the belt
for a while.
Which is fine. My only question is, what do you do with Bryan in the meantime? You know,
This leads me to my next topic.
Beat Cena Extreme
Rules? I'm sure that you know, because if you remember,
number one contender.
Right, if you remember when they did that thing where they brought in like the former world champions at the coronation. If you remember, like in that promo,
yeah.
John Cena said like, "Whoever gets the title first." I forgot Cena's exact words. He said like, "It doesn't matter if I get the title or Brian gets the title." He said, "Whoever gets it will give the other the rematch." So that rematch will come at some point.
Yeah.
I'm sure it will.
That rematch will come at some point. I think you need a bigger show than the May pay-per-view to do it. But what you could do is you could maybe do, you know, if Wyatt beats Cena on Sunday, you could do Wyatt-Brian. Remember, and that, why does that make sense? Not just because Wyatt beat Cena, but what happened at the Royal Rumble, which gets lost in the shuffle of all the bullshit with the crowd and all of the crybaby walking out, was Wyatt beat Bryan in the middle of the ring. So now Wyatt's history. Wyatt is a legit threat.
Now, what
you were
about the Bryan thing, about what does he do now, this leads me into my next topic, which is one of my favorite topics in pro wrestling, chasers versus chasees. To those of you that don't understand this, chasers are people that are constantly chasing towards a goal. The chasees are the people that have already reached the goal, but now they're fending off the people trying to push them off the mountain. Some guys are great chasers, but then when they finally get the title, you kind of scratch your head. I'll give you some great examples of really great chasers. Jeff Hardy is a great chaser. That whole run, like in whenever that was, like in 2008 on SmackDown, whatever year when Triple H was on SmackDown, when Jeff Hardy was like...
It was 08 into 09.
Yeah, that year where he was like rising his way up the ranks, fighting people, getting closer and closer and closer. Another underrated year in 2010 where Randy Orton was a babyface. And he was putting on consistent great matches every year. Not every year, but every night. And every time he had a title match, it was like a Nexus run-in or Sheamus ran away. Like, he was chasing that title for, like, that whole year. And he finally won it, like, I think in a six-pack challenge or something. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
The Usos are also great chasers. You know, sometimes you got guys that, you know, they're always chasing for a title. And they're very entertaining. But then it's like when they finally get the title, it's like you're not really sure where to go. And then on the other hand, you have some guys that are horrible chasers, which basically means they're not very good baby faces. But when they're being chased, meaning when they're champions, they're very entertaining. In this case, Triple H. I think everybody would agree, whether you like or hate Triple H, he's always better as a heel. He's always been more interesting as a heel. And his title runs have been better as a heel. I can't even remember Triple H. I can't remember any run he had as a babyface as champion. Every single run he's had, I remember as a heel. The only run
the
I remember 08, him.
The 08 run, the late 08 run wasn't bad.
It wasn't bad, yeah.
Because he was feuding with, remember, he was feuding with like four guys at the time. He was feuding with indirectly with Hardy. Kozloff was still undefeated, so he was kind of an indirect threat. Edge was coming back. Batista was lurking. Taker was always there. That 08 run on SmackDown, take the Khali feud out of it, and that was just there for the fuck of it at SummerSlam that year. The Triple H 08 run wasn't bad.
I think it just gets lost in the shuffle for some reason.
Yeah, but if you look back on it, it wasn't bad. It wasn't.
Yeah, as far as what Brian can do, I mean, there's a lot of guys he can fight, just depending on what direction they want to go in.
There's
you know,
one obvious
you got a lot
guy
of guys,
that should be sticking out. There's one obvious guy that if you're going to keep Brian as the second-tier program and you're going to keep the Shield Evolution program on top, you know what? And I think the crowd is ready to would be willing to accept it because I think they've been shitting on him since mid-March. Or more or less since he came back, I would even do Brian Sheamus.
Sheamus.
After Extreme Rules. I mean, let me tell you something. I was at the Barclays Center about a month ago for that Raw, and you want to talk about a guy get just hated, just despised, and it's been going on. And you know what? The night after Extreme Rules, have Sheamus bro kick him. And you bring up the history. You bring it up. Oh, I beat you once for a title, and it didn't even take me half a minute to do it, you know? I'll do it again, and there's your main match.
Great point, and this is a great transition into Paige. Now, everyone knows I don't care about divas at all. However, even though I don't care about divas, I can still give my respectful analysis. WWE, from what I understand, they're not satisfied with the reactions that Paige are getting. And the simple thing is, what WWE is doing is they're giving the fans the benefit of the doubt. They are assuming that their fans are watching NXT. And there are many fans that do watch NXT. Unfortunately, there are many more fans that do not. So you got to think about this, okay? Like let's ignore, because I'm pretty sure like anyone that's listening, if you listen to a wrestling podcast, you're clearly a wrestling fan, right? So if you're listening, you clearly know who Paige is, you know her history is and stuff like that. Like I don't even pay attention to divas, and I know her history and stuff like that. So we already know how good she is, okay? Let's think about this from the casual WWE fan standpoint, okay? So you got this chick named AJ Lee, who's been champion for X amount of days, however it's been. She's at WrestleMania 30, right? And she defends her title against, like, 13 other divas. And she beats them all, right? Okay? Now, think about this from a casual fan's point of view. Here's this champion that's been champion for, like, over almost a year, defeats, like, 13 divas. And then the very next night, she loses to a nobody. Someone you've never heard of. Now, if you watch NXT, great. But now, if you don't watch NXT, you're like, what the hell is this? You got to understand, like, think about this from a casual fan's point of view. Now, with the network, you have more, you know, creativity and you have more freedom to watch NXT because one of the big issues before the network was people would say, oh, well, I don't want to get a Hulu account. Oh, you know, I don't want to pull strings and, you know, go to X amount of website and make an account. But with the network, now you can watch NXT. But unfortunately, there's some fans that are not douchebags. There are some fans. I have one particular female wrestling fan that I've been friends with for a while, and I asked her point blank why she doesn't watch NXT, and I thought that she was going to give me like a douchebag answer, and the answer she gave me actually made sense. She told me that she doesn't watch NXT because she doesn't want to be spoiled, which makes sense. She doesn't want to look at NXT and be like, oh, that's the future. Like, she wants to be surprised. Her logic was, in the era of wrestling that we live in today, you know, kayfabe is clearly dead. You nearly know everything that's going to happen. But the least that she can do is she doesn't want to watch NXT because she wants to be surprised when she sees these new people debut. And I can definitely understand her reasoning with that, because I heard about the Wyatt family before they were on their main roster. I heard about them, but I did not watch any of their work on NXT, because I feared that if I watched their work on NXT, I feared that, like, okay, I don't want to join the crowd of people that are overhyping them, you know, and then when they finally debut, you're like, ah, you know, they're not that good. But the main point I'm making, though, is, like, you know, Paige, she's cool and all, you know, she's cool and all, but, like, to just debut her and have her win the title in her first match, that's kind of, I don't know. I don't think that was the best way to do it. Do you have any opinion about it, JCD? Okay, so JCD left us for a second, guys. Sorry about that. Back to Sheamus. I'll transition into the Paige thing later. Back to Sheamus. A lot of fans don't like Sheamus. I've been to a lot of forums, and I see a lot of fans ask, you know, why does Sheamus get booed? You know, what's the heat about? You know, why do fans dislike Sheamus? Sheamus is a good worker. He's really good in the ring. You know, no one is denying or doubting his in-ring work. The problem with Sheamus is he's pushed too soon. His character is a prime example of everything that you shouldn't do with a character. I watched the ECW brand. I'm not ashamed to admit it. When I watched the ECW brand, I was in college at the time. I was living in a dorm, and we didn't have, like, our cable subscription was different. We didn't have USA, but we did have Sci-Fi. And so I actually looked forward, and I watched ECW every Tuesday. And I remember very vividly, Sheamus, he debuted, and he was feuding with, like, Goldust and Yoshitatsu. And then, like, 3 months later, he was gone, and he was already WWE champion. So, you know, that's kind of, like, what pisses off fans right there. He was pushed way too soon, way too fast, that first run. It didn't work out at all. 2010 was a very weird year for WWE. They were experimenting a lot, and it just didn't work out. They experimented with Sheamus. It didn't work out. They experimented with Jack Swagger. That didn't work out. They experimented with The Miz in 2011. That's very debatable to this day. There are many fans that say it worked out, and then other fans that say it didn't work out. The one thing I will give Miz, whether or not you like The Miz or hate The Miz, the one thing I will give Miz is this. The Miz, he did have that old-school build. He has that build that many wrestling fans like. He had that build that Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart got. You can even compare Miz to Diamond Dallas Page almost. He was this nobody jobber announcer guy that just screamed, hoorah, like for random whatever. Then he was a jobber. Then he was in a tag team with John Morrison, and they eventually became tag team champions. Then they broke up. He did his own thing as a heel, you know, worked his way up the ranks, you know, and then he became United States champion a few times, I think two times, not exactly sure. Then he won Money in the Bank, which is basically this generation's King of the Ring, and then he finally became WWE champion. So whether or not you like The Miz or hate The Miz, he did go up that rank. He did work his way up the hierarchy. He started from nothing, and he worked his way up. The problem is that, you know, his reign in the grand scheme, like, what did it really mean? What did it really mean in the grand scheme? It didn't mean anything. That's the problem with The Miz. So, but that's not completely his fault. You know, anybody would have been overshadowed by The Rock, John Cena, because that feud was just, it took over everything. You know, anyone would have been second fiddle to that feud. It was impossible. No, nothing could top that. Anyway, so back to Paige. I hope Paige is able to get over well in WWE, and I don't think that was the best way to debut her, but I wish her the best of luck. Her style is very interesting. She looks different. That's good. One of the more common complaints I hear about WWE divas is that they all look alike. You know, she looks different. Her skin is pale and stuff like that. She has an accent. So that's cool. You know, since we still got some time left, I just want to explain why I don't really care about the divas. I had faith, I had hope in the Divas division. I was really happy when Awesome Kong, also known as Karma, when she came over. And when she was in WWE, I was really looking forward to it. I really thought that that was going to be the feud. Not the feud, but that was going to be the angle to revive the Divas division. But, you know, then the circumstance happened, you know, with, you know, her getting pregnant and then the eventual miscarriage and stuff. And I, when that happened, that was just such a bummer for me because just imagine the matches we could have seen. We could have seen, you know, Kong against Natalya, Kong against Gail Kim in a WWE ring. They horribly used Gail Kim. We could have seen Kong and Beth Phoenix. There are so many, you know, unique matches we could have gotten. And then when Kong left, it was like back to square one, you know. So, and, you know, soon after Kong left, like, I remember a lot of divas just left. Beth Phoenix left. Gail Kim left. Melina left. Michelle McCool left. Layla kept getting, she kept having complications with her knee. You know, just all the divas that I, you know, had faith in, all the divas that I felt like, you know, could have helped revive the division, one by one, they all just started leaving. And, you know, Natalya is like the only one that's left and stuff. So, I don't hate the Divas. It's just, you know, I don't really see the point to get invested in them because it just seems to me like I'm not trying to be sexist or nothing. I remember Jay, he did a rant about this on a previous episode. It seems like every single time they push a diva, she leaves. You know, this is a male-dominated business, and females on average seem to have other ambitions and goals in life. And it seems to me like in the long run, 9 times out of 10, most female talents are not willing to stay in the long run. Like, you know, they'll get their fame, they'll get the paycheck, then they'll leave. And it's hard for me to invest in the Divas division. Like, for so many years, I don't want to sound sexist, but for so many years, it's like, you know, you look at, like, the mid-card, main event, you look at the tag team scenes from different promotions, and it's been, like, the same guys. But then you look at the women's division, it's just a revolving door of females. It's almost like the porn industry, almost. There's just so many of them. It's just, it's hard for me to invest in that, you know. But hey, you know, there's some fans out there that enjoy women's wrestling. They enjoy divas. And to those fans, more power to you. So, you know, anyway, we've pretty much exhausted all the topics to talk about today. We talked about TNA. We talked about Ring of Honor. We talked about WWE. TNA Sacrifice is this Sunday. Whether or not we will have a post-review show, I'm not sure. I have to contact TOD via Facebook. So what I'm going to do tonight, guys, I'm just going to go ahead and call it a day early. We still have an hour left, but I'm really tired, had a tough day at work. So I'm just going to call it a day, and I'm just going to go ahead and leave you guys with this Warrior promo, which we play all the time on PWP, but we're going to play it now in memory and in tribute of him. Thanks for watching again, guys. I'm Toph with PWP. This is Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. Thanks for listening, and we will see you guys again. Pilots that have already made the sacrifice.
the draw into a nosedive, Hulk Hogan. Push yourself to total self-destruction. As you realize, Hulk Hogan, you are about to enter a world close to parts unknown. Oh, smell it, warriors. Do you, Hulk Hogan, look for a place to hide? Or do you, Hulk Hogan, face that challenge that may be more powerful than even you are, Hulk Hogan? You, Hulk Hogan, must self-destruct so that you will know, Hulk Hogan, who is the Chosen One. For Hulk Hogan, I am not the Chosen One that you speak. I am not. I, Hulk Hogan, am the only one.
Tonight's episode of Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Sign up today for a free audiobook and a free, absolutely positively free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/PWP Radio. Remember to include that /PWP Radio so they know we sent you. Once again, audibletrial.com/PWP Radio. Everybody who signs up helps support the show. Thank you very much and enjoy Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio.